This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
It's one of those weird days. It's like a two-guest day today. We have Attorney General William Tong joining us in the 8 o'clock hour. And now Chris Vandehoof from Penn Lincoln Strategies joining us in studio. Spends a lot of time at the Capitol. Did a great job, I'm told, getting a lot of legislators at the Camp Current fundraiser last week at the Arch Street Tavern, which a lot of people... unsolicited, and I don't want to give you compliments. It really doesn't serve me anything. But I heard you were very, very valuable, raising a lot of money last week.
It was good to see you there.
Thank you for coming back. I was quick in, quick out.
Did have a beer, I think. It was a little late for you.
I had one beer. And if I stay, that's the problem, right? Yeah. I mean, and also, I'm still getting to know people. So I know more and more people every year, and I've gotten much more comfortable. But especially with the Capitol, where... the men and women seem to really know each other well. It's, you know, I'll shake hands and the people that I know and need, feel the need to talk to, but I it's still not totally comfortable for me.
But why is that? You were so good on opening day. You knew so many people.
I know.
So many people came over to say hi to you.
I know. It's great. And I agree. It's just, I'm still, you know, again, there's just still this feeling, and it's a lot of it's like being a freshman or sophomore on the team type thing. You know what I mean? I still feel sort of feeling things out a little bit. But the point is that Camp Current's a great organization, and you did a great job getting people there.
Thank you.
It's kind of neat to see people just hanging out. It
doesn't happen as much as it used to.
Yeah, and it, you know, with the passing of Monahan, although I guess Monahan quit drinking, you know, very early on. But I mean, like a guy like that who it's just smacks of old school journalism, like hanging out afterward, and that's where you get. I actually saw Mike Cerulli, was it Fork and Fire or Fire and Forge or whatever that place is, like talking to staffers, sitting down and having a drink. I'm like, that guy's getting after it. How are things?
Things are great. Things are great. We're in the throes of the hardest part of the session. The public hearing process is going on. Committees are meeting to vote bills out that maybe they'll make it to the finish line. Maybe they won't. Every day is 9 a.m. to 6
Are you at the Capitol every day?
Every day. I'm going to go right from here back to there. And
so what do you do? Do you just walk around and drop in on people? Do you have scheduled meetings? Like, give me a little snippet in the life of a lobbyist in mid-March during the legislative session in Connecticut.
There's a lot of reading. A lot of bills come out every day. You got to figure out what they're going to do or figure out what they do or where they're going to go. There's probably anywhere between 5 to 8 public hearings every day. There's probably anywhere between 2 to 4 committee meetings where they're going to move bills.
But what do you do?
I'd have to follow all of this stuff. You know, we talk to legislators about, hey, what do you want to do with this bill, or this client has a concern about this bill, or this client wants that bill done. Then you talk to other lobbyists who have clients on the other side of the issue or on the same side of the issue. It's a lot of organized chaos is what it is.
Are you like allowed to tell us like who you represent and stuff, or does that stay private?
I mean, it's public information. You know, we could walk through it. I'd say one of the top things we're working on right now is we represent the Connecticut Farm Bureau. And there's a lot of stuff happening in the world of agriculture in Connecticut right now. A lot of stuff happening in the world of agriculture nationally with the new administration.
Is it because of the tariff issue?
The tariffs issue is a thing. The egg prices are crazy. You know, bird flu is a real thing that we are trying to really get our hands around.
So specifically, and again, you push, how does that, like, do you represent, like, egg suppliers within the group?
Hillendale Farms, which is based in Connecticut and is the biggest producer of eggs east of the Mississippi.
In Connecticut?
In Connecticut. They've got three or four.
What's the name of it?
Hillendale. They've got three or four different locations. I'm not going to get the towns right. Basra, maybe Franklin, down in that part of the state.
Biggest east of the Mississippi.
East of the Mississippi, biggest egg producer east of the Mississippi, and so you know they're a part of the Farm Bureau, and you know they're focused on what's going on with bird flu right now, and working with the Department of Agriculture, and Commissioner Hurlburt over there and his crew are doing a great job, and so you know all that stuff is going on, and then you've got all these other things. There's pesticide issues happening, land use issues happening every day.
Now the tariff. For agriculture, the tariff, the trade battles seem to tend to favor American ag. Is that not true?
So I, you know, the tariff thing hasn't made its way to my spot in the LOB cafeteria yet, which is an important spot to have. You know, we're working on what we can do here in Connecticut for farmers in our state. So
the egg producers, they had to kill a bunch of birds? They had to go through that whole process?
I'm not an expert on that either, but I do know that if a bird tests positive for bird flu, then I think it's called euthanize.
Euthanize.
Yeah. We don't just kill them. We euthanize them.
Right. I guess that's how you do it. But they say it takes 6 to 9 months to build the population up. But that is a huge piece of information that I had no idea. I'd like to have those folks on the show. Could you?
Happy to help.
That would be awesome. The budget-wise, you know, we have less time than ever. I got about 5 line items here, and I wanted to talk some hoops and other stuff too. But the Speaker of the House, Matt Ritter, this whole thing about passing this special ed money while the governor was away, then the governor vetoes, and then they could have overridden it, but then they come up with a deal. They find more ARPA interest bearing money that, like, is to me. But like, was that like a shot across the bow of Ritter being like, you know, like, I'm the sheriff in town type thing?
I don't think so.
Felt like it to me.
Yeah. You know, I don't think so. I haven't had a conversation with him about it.
Well, he wouldn't say it.
Well, he might to you. Have you had him on?
Yeah, I had him on. But I'm going to say, are you telling the governor who's in control? He's going to say, no. It's a misunderstanding. You know, it's just bad communication. You know, that kind of thing. He's not going to tell me that.
But maybe that's just the truth. So, you know, listen, there's a lot of moving pieces to funding special education, funding education in the state, and the legislature decided they needed to do something with it at that point. I think it was somewhat coincidental that the governor was in India.
Equivocating because of your job?
This isn't equivocating. The governor happened to be in India. I don't think he planned the week before to go to India. That's not really how that works.
No.
So the governor's in India doesn't really...
But he could have scheduled the vote or done it when he was here.
He could have.
Or when he got back.
But the governor doesn't need to be here for the legislature to do anything.
But he did. They passed something that he didn't want.
Okay, but what if the governor goes home at the end of the day and the legislature stays until midnight?
I don't know. It just feels like it was weird timing. I don't know. Maybe there's nothing to it.
But at the end of the day, it worked out. Both sides kind of got what they wanted, I think. And, you know, we'll move on.
Well, I'm curious because I play this game a lot. You know, Ritter he's in his third term as speaker.
Correct.
And is it true that no one has ever done it a fourth term ever in the history of the state? Is that true?
The Connecticut legislature has been around a long time, so I can't say yes, it's never happened. It's not happened in the last probably 50 years that I'm aware of.
Does that mean he would honor that unwritten thing, or would he go for? Because I'm wondering, like, a guy like that who's, you know, obviously the family name is what it is,
sure.
And he's still very young. And I hadn't thought about him running for governor, but I don't know, because like, what if he doesn't want to do the fourth term to stick with that sort of thing that's been happening? Where does he go? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just curious, because I love the parlor game of the whole, because I know that most people think he's leaning toward running, but you just never know. Do you think it's something, I mean, you know that guy better than I do. You think he'd want to run for governor?
I think he'd make a fantastic governor. I think he's focused on being the speaker right now. And what is the current governor going to do?
Well, it all hinges on that, obviously.
Right.
But there's a lot of Democrats waiting in the wings, and he's one I hadn't considered, I guess. Mm. I hadn't thought about it. His name is Chris Vandehoof. Try to spell it at your peril. What's capitalized, what isn't, I don't know. I just try to – it took me 2 years to – have some confidence in saying it, but it's Penn Lincoln Strategies, a good friend of the show, and he's here for another half an hour here to talk about anything from the bracket to, you know, more stuff about the budget, his view of D.C. right now, just his general thoughts on what's going on in the nation right now. So we'll take a we're back here with Chris Vandehoof from Penn Lincoln Strategies, and we have Attorney General Tong joining us in about 10, 15 minutes. I mean, I'm sort of blown away. Do you remember where what you were doing 5 years ago this week? Like, do you actually? Because I feel like a part of it's repressed for me. I was actually in Mexico on vacation, but we can get into that. But like, it was March 13th of 2020 where Trump, you know, shut down. Like nobody from Europe could come here, and that was sort of like it.
Yeah, we were talking about it this week at the Capitol. We believe that it was March 11th, 2020, that. The legislative management announced that we were closing the Capitol and the legislative office building for a 2-week deep cleaning, that we would come back basically at the beginning of April. And then we came back in.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
January of 2022.
Almost 2 years later.
It was almost two full years later.
How'd you do your job?
Well, the session basically ended in 2020. 2021, we did it from our office across the street via text. You know, once it warmed up, folks would meet you outside and you'd go for a walk around the building and talk about stuff.
Were you worried about the...
Everything was on Zoom.
Were you worried about your business, like surviving it type thing? Because like you have to talk to people to do your job.
Yeah, you know, I've talked about this before. It changed sort of the way that it was appropriate to lobby. It became more appropriate to text and more appropriate to email and more appropriate to call, in because you had to communicate somehow and they had to communicate somehow as well. And so it sort of just shifted the way that you communicated with folks, right? And it took a little bit, I think, for a lot of people. I mean, you got to remember, there was a class that was elected in 2019 that became freshman legislators in 2020 that weren't in a building with lobbyists in it until 2022. So they've served an entire term without being what's called lobbying on the rope.
Well, but you also have to justify what you're doing, that there's a value to it for these companies. You know, like if some companies are like, well, you're sitting around texting all day and like, you know, I'm giving you the X thousands in a retainer. I don't know. It's just, I would think that lobbying would have taken a hit there, but you were able to sustain it, obviously, through it. But I mean, you never were worried about the business.
I wasn't. It just shifted in how you did it.
Yeah.
You know, and I still text today. So the clients are pretty happy.
I feel like you're lucky, you know, I won't get into like details, but I think your kids being younger was a good thing. I mean, you're basically at a COVID baby, right? I mean,
yeah.
Your youngest was born like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. He was born in 2021. And the 9-year-old was not yet in kindergarten when COVID hit. And so, you know, a lot of kids struggled with it, and he sort of fell into this, like, gap where it impacted him a little bit, but not, he wasn't in school every day, like, you know, going to an elementary school. He was going to preschool. And so
he didn't have socialization.
He just didn't go to preschool anymore, right?
Right.
And so by the time he was ready for school, we were back in school.
Because like mine, you know, my daughter was in eighth grade and we had just moved here and she went, you know, she was a, they shut the school down and we didn't have a neighborhood where we knew people, right? Yeah. So she didn't have friends she grew up with. So
my, that's tough.
Yeah, it was really, really hard. So I think if you have young kids, there were challenges more. Maybe your nine-year-old might be more screen dependent. I don't know. Like those kind of things.
He would love to be more screen dependent.
But you have good rules in the house?
We have good rules in the house. His mother has good rules in the house.
Good for her. Good for her. I mean, because that to me is like the other part of it is that, you know, my wife and I were both trying to work and our kids. It's hard to corral like elementary and middle school kids to do the Zoom stuff. So I don't know. I find it to be just a strange anniversary because I thought it would be an interesting family time and I ended up hating it. I mean, it was really hard to, you think you're going to motivate and do all these family focused things. And then we just wanted to find ways to be apart from each other. it was just kind of funny. In that sense, are you still doing the card stuff or has that disappeared?
We do some of the card stuff, not as much. You know, it's more baseball dependent, so we'll probably start to get back into it a little bit. But
so he loves baseball. I feel like baseball has passed from like father to child. Although your wife's she's a baseball fan too. But
huge
like,
Orioles. Our dog's name is Ripken. I mean,
get out. You allowed that to happen?
Yeah. Well, who doesn't like Cal Ripken? You don't like Cal Ripken?
I didn't say I didn't like him. I didn't know if I would name my dog after him. But okay. I mean, I do like the Orioles. They're sort of one of our sort of sneaky teams that we like, even though it's in the division. But but baseball is not. Kids don't come home and be like, "Daddy, I want to play baseball." It's something that the parents, the mother or the father, brings into the relationship. So clearly, one or both of you are big baseball fans.
We're big baseball people. Our oldest has become a big baseball person. I mean, he will watch the Marlins play the Padres on MLB TV.
Get out.
He asked me to buy him a scorebook. He kept the scorebook. Now, he won't do the whole nine innings, but he'll do backwards Ks and keep track of balls and
good
strikes.
Good for you.
And, yeah, it's great.
There's people still raising good kids here in America. My kids can't do it. I mean, to watch baseball on television requires a fair amount of patience in this contemporary times. It's correct. Not a lot of dramatic action. You have to. It's sort of background for a lot of times. My wife's a big Red Sox fan. We're talking with Chris Vandia from Penn Lincoln Strategies. I'm just curious. You know, we talked about how... You know, we're not really sure about a lot of things, you know, in terms of the tariffs. But in general, you know, whether it's Medicaid or other federal, like how impactful will what's going on in D.C. be on not just life here in Connecticut, but finances of the state?
Yeah, I think it's going to be super impactful, right? And it'd be interesting to hear what Attorney General Tong has to say about it when he's in here in a little while. You know, this wholesale sort of the chainsaw of bureaucracy thing that Elon Musk is doing is, I think it's exceptionally dangerous. Everybody probably would agree that you need to find waste and fraud in government and cut it out. And it certainly exists. It probably doesn't exist at the level that they are telling us it does. I think the vast majority of people get up in the morning, whether they work for the federal government or the state government, and go to work and try to do their best. Doesn't mean that there aren't inflated budgets or bloated budgets that need to be cut down. But wiping out wholesale the Department of Education is a problem, right? It's a problem. It's going to be a problem that's going to bleed into the state.
So how? Okay, there's two questions to that. Just your opinion. How is it a problem? Number one, and number two is, what would you do otherwise if you know? Like, I mean, no, that's not the question. The question is, how is it a problem? Number two is, what do you think their intention is? It's not like they don't want our kids to learn and be smart and help America be successful.
It isn't.
I mean, do you think that's what their goal is?
Well, you tell me what their intention is, because they're not telling us what the intention is. The intention is they say they're cutting fraud and bureaucracy. You think that you have to wipe out the entire Department
of
Education?
Well, what do you think their intention is?
I don't know. I think their intention is to create, to remove the barriers and the guardrails, which I know is a fun word to use in Connecticut, but to remove the barriers and guardrails of what the federal government is doing so that they can restructure it in a way that's beneficial to them.
And how would that benefit the quote-unquote them?
Because there's more oversight on them. Because they're removing...
Right, but I guess my point is like, and I'm not for it or against it. I'm just saying like what... I mean, ultimately, if you're in leadership, you want the education system to work. You want to raise kids who are competent and can go and have careers and fuel the future of this country.
Presumably.
Well, why wouldn't they, I guess?
Well, I would... I would make the argument that one of the problems we have today is we have a lack of critical thinking, right, on both sides. People just want to run to the echo chamber that tells them what they think they believe is correct, right? We don't have critical thought anymore about, well, the right may be good on this and the left may be good on that, so let's figure
that's what this show's about, but yeah. Well, no, that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
That's what I'm trying to do.
Let's have that discussion, but like, what is going to happen when 52 or 53% of our state budget in Connecticut is federally mandated by either court order or by federal agreement through the courts that we get X amount of dollars from whatever agency, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, Department of Education.
So hugely dependent on the federal government.
Correct. And if you're just slashing and you're firing 25, 35, 100% of a federal agency, what does that do to the states that get money from the federal government?
Well, that's essentially my question. Like, so there's two prongs. Because one is like, I'm trying to figure out what it's not like people want to, I mean, if you want to protect the tax cuts to make your friends wealthy, that's one thing. If you truly believe that states should have more power, that's another thing. But I think ultimately it's hard for me to fathom people who run this country don't want our children to succeed, right? And our proficiency in a lot of parts of education, and I'm not advocating what they're doing. I'm saying our proficiency lags our cohort internationally, right? We're not
for sure
doing well in school. So something needs to change. I'm not saying this is the answer, but I it's hard for me to accept that somebody's trying to be punitive to our children, right? So I don't know where that money they save is going to go either. You know, like
it's got to pay for the tax cuts. Something has to pay for the tax.
That's
cuts.
That's where my problem goes in, because if it was going toward balancing the budget or returning more money to the states, then I'd be a little more constructive on it. You know, we only have about 30 seconds. Do you think that this changes the guardrail Connecticut conversation, that, you know, Lamont has to be more protective now because he doesn't know what's going to happen?
I think it has to change it, right? It has to change what happens with the volatility cap. It has to change what happened with the guardrails, because if you're not going to get the money from Washington, D.C. to pay for all of the things that we need to do here in Connecticut,
then we need to find more money.
We have to find more money, right? But I don't, you know, there's not a world, I think, where we're going to raise taxes. So how do you structure the $25 billion budget over the next 2 years to continue providing the services for our citizens?
Chris Vandehoof from Penn Lincoln Strategy. You stick around a little bit?
Yeah, is that all right?
The Attorney General, he's in the lobby.
I see him out there.
Oh, he's
give him a nice wave.
Out there.